It can follow up to 4 targets at the same time.
How does it know when to shoot? Tessa asked.
The guns are activated by movement. They shoot anything that moves past its camera.
He turned back to me.
I put these here to keep my equipment safe from Elgin when I am not here. If they were to get our communication codes, it would endanger everything.
It seems extreme, Tessa said.
Our cause is extreme, Jaime said seriously. The sentry is very effective, but so far, all it has shot are monkeys. That is good.
Not for the monkeys, Tessa said.
Monkeys and whatever that thing is, I said, looking at the animal, which had finally stopped twitching.
What is that thing? Tessa asked.
Jaime pointed to the pile of fur.
That, señorita, is dinner. The oso hormiguero.
Lovely, she replied.
I walked up to examine the beast. It had thick, spiky fur and a long body about 4 feet in length, not including its tail, which was curled up around its belly. I still couldn't tell what it was, and I had to push it over with my foot to see its head. It had small, dark eyes and an elongated snout. It's an anteater, I said.
Was, Tessa said. I think its anteating days are over.
Yes, you call it an anteater, Jaime said. It is most tasty.
I've had it before, Tessa said. It was okay.
She looked at Jaime.
Do you have anything to drink?
The water barrel is there, Jaime said,
pointing to a 5-gallon white plastic bucket.
You must lift the lid. The cup is hanging next to it. Be sure to look for spiders. They like the water.
I'll keep that in mind, she said.
She unhooked the tin-handled cup hanging next to the bucket, then lifted the bucket's lid. For a moment, she just stared.
There's something dead in here, she said dryly. Actually, there's like a million dead things in here, but there's one really big dead thing.
Jaime walked over and looked in. He took another cup and lifted out an 8-inch insect.
It is only a walking stick, not poisonous.
I feel so much better now, Tessa said.
She skimmed the top of the bucket, dumping the contents of her cup on the ground 3 times before scooping up a cup of water clear enough to drink. She drank down 2 cups, then filled it up again and brought it over to me. There were small things floating around in it, mostly mosquitoes and fleas, but I drank it anyway.
Thanks, I said. It's funny how we adapt, isn't it? In the academy days, I would complain if my water didn't have a slice of lime in it. But after being in the jungle this long, hardly anything bothers me anymore. I once ate a roasted armadillo. The Amakara roll them up and cook them in their own shells.
What I wouldn't give for a cheeseburger about now, I said. Sorry, Jaime said. No cheeseburgers. But I do have food.
He disappeared into the first tent and returned carrying 2 boxes, which he handed to us.
I was only making a joke about the anteater, he said. We cannot make a fire to roast it. The Elgin soldiers could follow the smoke. But trust me, it is very delicious.
I'll take your word for it, I said.
We opened the boxes. Inside was a ham sandwich sealed in cellophane, a package of crackers with soft cheese, quinoa cake, a sublime chocolate bar, a piece of fruit I'd never seen before, a bottle of Inca Kola, and a yogurt drink.
Real food, Tessa said. Muchas, muchas gracias. It's been so long.
Yes, thanks, I said. I'm starving.
Come inside the tent to eat, he said. We will talk.
Jaime lifted the mosquito netting around the second tent. We ducked under the netting and went inside. The interior was a square, about 12 feet by 12 feet, cluttered with crates and barrels. There was a small collapsible plastic table against one side of the tent, with a ham radio and a digital clock. Stacked up next to the table were long crates with the word Peligro stenciled on them. Jaime grabbed himself a box of food, and all three of us sat down on the tent's vinyl tarp floor.
"I like this Inca Kola," I said. "It tastes like bubble gum."
"You have this in America?"
Jaime asked. "No," I said. "At least not in Idaho."
"Shame," he said.
I lifted the fruit. "What is this?"
"Granadilla," Jaime said. "Try it."
I peeled it open. Inside, the fruit was gray and looked like mucus.
"It looks like snot," Tessa said.
Jaime laughed.
"Yes, Americans call it snot fruit. Try it."
I looked at it for a moment, then took a bite. It actually was quite good. Tessa just looked disgusted.
"I just threw up in my mouth," she said.
I ate the rest of the fruit, then took hers as well.
"There's something I'm wondering," Tessa said. "How did the Amakara know to find you here?"
"A few days ago, when I saw smoke coming from the compound, I asked the chief to keep an eye out for Michael and the others."
"So that's how he knew my name," I said.
"Yes, I told him about you."
Jaime looked at Tessa.
"But I am surprised that he did not tell me about you."
"They were looking out for me," Tessa said.
Jaime shook his head.
"Our affairs are not the Amakara's affairs, but the Elgin have been bad to them."
"Do you know where my mother and friends are?" I asked.
"Your mother and Tanner made it to the rendezvous site. They are now safe with our people."
Hearing this filled me with a powerful sense of relief.
"And what about the rest of the Electro Clan?"
Jaime's expression turned.
"They have been captured."
My relief vanished.
"The Elgen got them?"
"No. The Peruvian army."
I shook my head.
"I don't understand why they're hunting us."
"It was my country's electricity you stopped."
"Do you know where they're being held?"
"They are at a jail in Puerto Maldonado, but we are sure they will take them back to Lima to be tried."
"Tried? For what?"
"For terrorism."
"Terrorism? We're not terrorists. The Elgin are the terrorists. We were helping your country."
"They did not ask for your help. The way they see it, you put my country out of power. Shops and businesses shut down. Hospitals are on backup generators. People will go hungry. The power outage cost my country millions and millions of dollars. Only we know that what you did was good."
"That's not fair."
"No, but that is how it is in the world. The wise are hung, and the fools are glorified, at least while they are living."
I raked my fingers back through my hair. "What will happen if they try them in your courts?"
"They will probably find them guilty of terrorism."
"What will they do to them?
They're just teenagers."
Jaime's voice came slowly.
"If they are found guilty, their age will not matter."
"What will they do to them?" I asked again. Jaime hesitated.
"They will probably be executed."
My blood ran cold.
"They can't do that."
"My country abolished the death penalty in 1979, but not for treason and terrorism."
"We can't let that happen. I'm not going to let that happen. How many soldiers are there?"
"More than you can fight," Jaime said. "Maybe as many as 4,000 soldiers. Even if our organization risked everything and came out in the open to help you, we could not rescue your friends.
An army couldn't, I said, but a mouse can get in where a lion can't. He looked at me.
That is true.
I could sneak in and rescue them like we did in Pasadena. Are they still in Puerto Maldonado?
You will never get close. There are many patrols, and they have built fences. I am certain that they will be moving your friends soon.
They'll fly them to Lima?
No, they will not fly, Jaime said. They must have been warned about Tanner, because they did not bring any aircraft into the area. And Tanner destroyed all the Elgin helicopters.
But you said that Tanner's gone.
The Elgin and the army do not know that.
Then they'll have to drive them to Lima, Tessa said.
There is only one road to Lima, Jaime said. It is a mountain road and very narrow at spots. That is your best chance of stopping them. It could be like Thermopylae.
The what? Tessa asked.
Thermopylae is an ancient place in Greece where 300 Spartans held off tens of thousands of Persians. It is a narrow place that a large army can't march through. If only a few people can get through the door at a time, it doesn't matter how many people there are.
If we stop the trucks in front, the rest will be trapped behind them, I said. Then what? Tessa asked. In the confusion, I'll sneak in and free my friends.
They will be guarded, Jaime said.
I can take care of that, I said.
But you will still be surrounded by the entire army, Jaime said.
If we had everyone's powers, I said. Jaime looked skeptical.
Those powers did not stop them from being captured.
But if they were enhanced, I turned to Tessa. Could you enhance everyone's power at the same time? I enhanced a 500,000 rats' power at the same time, she said. If we had even 10 times the power, Taylor could reboot all the soldiers at the same time, and we could just walk out of there. Zeus could fire real lightning and destroy any weapon. McKenna could go supernova and melt everything in sight. Jaime looked at me.
It is still a big risk. We need to talk to the voice and see what he says.
You can contact the voice? I asked. He looked around cautiously, then nodded.
Yes.
What's the voice? Tessa asked. Jaime looked at me, then Tessa.
We cannot speak of the voice around her.
Tessa turned red. You don't trust me? I followed you into the middle of the jungle, and you don't trust me? Tessa, it's okay, I said. He's not trying to insult you. He's just got to be sure. Then get sure, she said to Jaime.
Suddenly, Jaime froze. Do you hear that?
We stopped talking to listen.
No,
I said. I looked at Tessa. I don't hear anything, Tessa said, still sounding annoyed. In fact, it's kind of quiet.
Yes, Jaime said. Exactly.
He stood.
Just a minute.
He parted the door and walked out of the tent. As soon as the tent's flap shut, Tessa asked, What's this voice? I looked at the door to make sure Jaime was really gone, then back at her. I lowered my voice. After we escaped from Pasadena, we went back to Idaho. The Elgin followed us. We were hiding from them at a tanning salon when a woman came in and handed me a cell phone. There was a man on the other end. He knew who we were and where we'd been. He knew all about the Elgin. That's how we got down here. He flew us down. Who is he?
I don't know.
All I know is that he hates Hatch as much as I do. Why is he so secret? because secrecy is his most important weapon. You can't fight an enemy you don't know exists.
She nodded. That makes sense.
She looked around the place.
What if this voice tells you not to go after your friends?
I'll go anyway.
They mean that much to you?
They're my friends, I said. You don't abandon your friends. For a moment, she was quiet. Then she said,
It wasn't like that at the academy. We got along because it was a rule, but everyone was in competition with one another.
She looked at me seriously.
Friends or not, I don't think it's a good idea going up against the army. You'll only get caught.
I have to, I said, and I really need your help. She looked down.
I don't know, she said. I have to think about it. If Hatch captures me, he'll punish me for running away.
I looked into her eyes.
Tessa, I can't do it without you.
She took a deep breath.
I just don't know. I have to think about it.
I sighed. Think about it, because either way, I'm going. The silence between us grew uncomfortable, and I began gulping. After another minute, I said, Jaime's been gone a long time for just checking around.
Maybe he had to use the bathroom, Tessa said.
I stood. I'm going to see what he's doing. I walked out of the tent. At first, I didn't see anything. I took a few steps before I saw Jaime lying motionless on the ground.
Jaime?
I started walking toward him.
Tessa!
I shouted. Tessa came to the flap of the tent and looked out.
What is it?
Jaime's on the ground.
Did he have a heart attack?
Someone shouted,
Put your hands on your head and walk out of the tent! Now!
I looked up as a squad of uniformed Elgin guards emerged from the jungle. Their guns were pointed at us.
Now!
The guard shouted again.
Both of you, or we'll open fire!
I'm not going back,
Tessa said, her voice pitched with terror. She ducked into the tent. I put my hands on my head.
Don't shoot!
Don't try anything, Vey, one of the guards said. Or we will. And tell the girl to get back out here before we shoot up the tent.
I turned back.
Tessa! Come out!
I shouted.
They'll shoot!
Tessa?
The short guard to my left repeated.
Was that really Tessa, aka Tesla?
I didn't answer.
Jackpot, boys, the guard said. It's two for one day at the Happy Mart. Vey and Tessa. Hatch is going to be happier than a monkey on a banana boat.
Tessa slowly walked back out. She was shaking.
Beautiful little Tessa, the guard said, grinding his teeth. Remember me? Carvel?
He walked up to her.
I always had a thing for redheads. And then you had to go and run off.
His expression turned dark.
Hatch was so upset when you went missing that he fed your bodyguard to the rats.
His eyes narrowed.
He was my cousin.
Tessa swallowed. She looked pale, like she might faint.
Did someone radio base? A guard asked. There's no coverage, the captain replied. We'll radio it in back at the river.
Look at that tower, another guard said. They've been communicating with someone.
Let's find out who, the captain said. Search the tents.
Four of the guards disappeared into the tents. I was twitching a lot, and electricity was sparking around me wildly. Under duress, it always did, but with Tessa standing next to me, it was crazy.
It was even sparking between my legs, climbing from my ankles to thighs like a Jacob's ladder.
"Stop sparking!" the main guard shouted.
"I can't help it," I said.
"Then I'll help you," another voice said.
Two of those yellow and red striped darts struck me in the side. I collapsed to the ground, groaning as I fell, but I was still sparking. The darts started smoking, then blew. My energy immediately returned.
"It's Tessa," Carvel said. "She's making him more electric. She's got that way with men."
Three darts hit Tessa, then another three darts hit me. Tessa fell to the ground about 2 yards from me. My electricity stopped. Tessa was almost breathless with pain. My own pain was agonizing, but she seemed less able to handle it.
"Let's move it!"
the captain shouted.
"Pedro, Paer, and Sanchez, secure the radio. Find out who they've been broadcasting to. I want all codes, logs, and frequencies. Then we're going to pack that thing out of here."
"Yes, sir."
"Johnny and Ryan, you have Vay. Cuff and reset him. And be careful. He's slippery. Carvel, since you and Tessa are such good friends, she's all yours. Reset her, too."
"My pleasure,"
Carvel said, pulling the white reset box out of his pack.
"I'm going to keep it turned up a bit high just to be sure you're not enjoying this, sweetheart. Every time you scream out with pain, I want you to think about my cousin in the bowl."
Tessa began to cry. The men connected the reset to my leg. Then they rolled me onto my stomach and pinned my arms behind my back and banded them together.
"Should we band his legs?" one of the guards asked.
"Only if you want to carry him out of here," another replied.
"That would be negatory,"
he laughed. He smacked me in the head.
"Sorry, boy. No free rides on this train."
Out of my peripheral vision, I could see them cuffing Tessa's hands as well. She was still crying, but not struggling. She looked as if she was having difficulty breathing. The reset was set way too high for her. When we were both secure, they dragged Tessa on her back to the center of the camp and lay her next to me. Then the men left us to join the others searching the tents, leaving just 2 guards to watch over us. That's all they needed. With the resets, we could barely even breathe, let alone escape. With some effort, I looked over at Jaime. He was so still, I wondered if he was dead. But I hadn't heard any gunshots, and he'd been cuffed, which wouldn't make sense if he were dead. Then I saw the dart sticking out of his hip. It was not like one of the reset darts. It was more like a needle. They had tranquilized him. Of course they had. The Elgin only killed when their foe had no value. Jaime had value. They would torture him for information. They would break him and learn about the voice. They would know everything. Our cause would be lost. Then I noticed something else. Something on the ground next to him. The small black remote to the robotic guns had fallen out of his pocket.
"Tessa,"
I whispered. Only her eyes moved toward me. Her cheeks were stained with tears mixed with dirt. I struggled to take a deep breath.
"No matter what happens, don't move a muscle. Not a muscle. Understand?"
I gestured with my eyes to the remote. She followed my gaze to the device, then looked back at me. She looked scared, but blinked in understanding. On my stomach, I inched my way toward Jaime. If I could get close enough, I could roll over onto the remote and activate it with my fingers. Moving was slow and painful, and I had to rest after each exertion, hoping that the guards didn't notice me
and that the other guards didn't finish their search before I got to Jaime. I was about 2 feet from the remote when the rest of the guards emerged from the tents, their arms loaded with papers and equipment.
"We've found a treasure trove, gentlemen,"
the captain said, his arms laden with boxes. Then one of the guards glanced over at me.
"What's he doing?"
"He's going for that thing," another said, pointing to the remote.
"What is that?"
the captain asked.
"Someone get that!"
With everything I had, I rolled onto my back over the remote.
"Get him!"
the captain shouted. Slightly arching my back, I got the remote in my hands and moved it around in my fingers. As the first guard reached me, I pressed the button. The entire campsite exploded with machine gun fire.
"Ambush!"
a guard shouted, before falling to the ground, riddled with bullets. The sound of bullets whistled past me, one so close that it caught a flap of my shirt, ripping the side of it open. The guards shouted in panic, making their situation worse as they went for their weapons to combat their unseen assaulters. The firing probably lasted less than 20 seconds, but felt much, much longer. I closed my eyes until the firing stopped, the stench of smoke falling low to the ground. I fought coughing. I dared not even move my head enough to look around to see if anyone was left. I was afraid to look at Jaime and Tessa. When it had been quiet for nearly 30 seconds, I pushed the remote button again, then slowly raised my head enough to see the turret. The red light above the gun was off. I breathed out in relief, then fell back again, my body racked with pain. The Elgin guards were lying all around me, but no one was moving. I looked back at Tessa. She was shaking.
"It's off,"
I croaked. She tried to speak, but couldn't. She was drenched with sweat, and her blouse looked as if she had showered in it. The resat was set way too high. I worried that if I couldn't get it turned off soon, that it might stop her heart. But I could barely move myself, and I doubted that I could cut myself loose, even if I could wriggle myself to the nearest guard and unlatch his knife. That left Jaime. I had to get the dart out of him. I rolled over again, then pushed myself up over him. I felt around until I found the dart, clasped it with my fingers, then rolled off, collapsing on the other side of him. I had the dart. Now he just needed to wake up. Chapter 5. Into the Darkness. It was nearly a half hour before Jaime stirred. About 5 minutes before Jaime woke, Tessa began convulsing, and then her eyes rolled back into her head, and she passed out. I struggled back to her and even tried to kick the resat, but I was too weak. Jaime groaned, then his eyes opened.
"Jaime," I said. He looked at me.
"Help."
He sat up and looked around at the fallen guards.
"What happened?"
"Turn this off,"
I gasped. He walked on his knees over to me. His hands were still bound behind his back.
"I can unfasten it," Jaime said.
"No, if they're unfastened without being turned off, they power up to full. It could kill me."
"How do you turn it off?"
"The guard right there put it on me. He should have the control."
Jaime crawled over to him and felt through his pockets.
"I think I found it."
"Push it,"
I said. My resat powered down. I took a deep breath, then pulsed as hard as I could, melting my wristbands. Then I crawled over to Carvel and turned off Tessa's resat. She immediately gasped for air as if she'd just come up from underwater. I detached the machine and threw it into the jungle, then put my head against her chest. To my relief, her heart was beating.
"Cut me loose," Jaime said.
I stood up and walked over to him. Careful not to touch him, I grabbed his bands and melted through them.
"Gracias," he said.
He stretched out his arms, then rubbed his wrists.
"Muchas gracias."
I went back to Tessa. Her eyes were still closed. I gently rubbed her face, wiping the mud off her cheeks. Her eyelids fluttered, then opened. She looked into my eyes, still too weak to speak.
"Are you okay?" I asked.
She took another few breaths, then said softly,
"Yeah."
"Let me take care of your bands." I grabbed her bands and pulsed. With the enhancement of Tessa's returning power, the band didn't melt. It vaporized. She brought her hands to her face and began sobbing. I put my arms around her and she fell against me, her face buried against my chest. When she had settled a little, I asked,
"Are you okay?"
"I thought I was going to die," she said.
"What happened?"
Jaime asked.
"How are the Elgen guards all dead?"
I turned back to him. "Your remote fell out of your pocket. I pushed it." Jaime looked at me with admiration.
"You are very clever," he said. "Very, very clever."
He looked at the radio and papers scattered around the campsite, and his expression turned grave.
"Were we compromised?"
"I don't know. I heard them say that they didn't have radio coverage here."
"Madre de Dios," he said. "Esquivar una bala. We were lucky. We need to get out of here. The Elgin usually travel like lobos, and their radios have tracking devices. We need to leave before these guards are found missing."
"Where do we go?"
"We need to radio the voice," Jaime said. "But we cannot carry the tower. We will have to find a mountain."
"Where?"
"West of here. It is also in the direction of the mountain pass the army will take to Lima."
"How long will it take us to get there?"
"To the mountain, it is several days without packs. But we have much to carry. The radio and decoder are very heavy. I will need a gun and ammunition. And we will need food." He sighed. "It took me a month to carry all this in. We must leave in minutes. We must burn everything we do not take."
"But won't they see the smoke?"
Tessa said.
"Yes, but it is too much for us to carry," Jaime said. "We must take that chance and be gone before they arrive."
"I'll start the fire," I said.
"No. We must be ready to go before we start a fire, in case they are near."
"What do we need to do?"
Tessa asked, forcing herself to her feet.
"Help me pack the supplies," he said to Tessa. "Michael, the Elgin have helped us. Please, gather what they have dropped into a pile. Then we will soak it with gasoline."
"On it," I said. Jaime and Tessa disappeared into the tent, while I walked around the camp and picked up all the papers and books the Elgin had already brought out. I piled them in the center of the clearing, then dragged some logs over and made a fire pit. As I was finishing, Jaime and Tessa came out carrying three large backpacks. Jaime took two of the guard's utility belts and fastened them around his waist. I took one of the backpacks from Jaime, and we carried the packs outside the clearing. I turned back toward the camp. "Are we ready to start the fire?"
"Si,"
Jaime said. Laying down my pack, I went back and emptied 3 5-gallon cans of gasoline over the pit. Then I created a lightning ball and threw it onto the pile. It burst into flames as tall as me. Black smoke began rising above the canopy.
"Pronto," Jaime said. "We have just revealed our location. We must go." I started to put my pack back on when I had an idea.
Wait, the turret guns.
What about them? Jaime said.
Can you put them on a delay?
A delay? Why?
Then a knowing smile lit his face.
Ah, entiendo.
He went over and punched something in on the sentry's computer. As he returned, he picked up the remote, pushed it, then tossed it into the bushes.
30 seconds should be enough.
What did he do?
Tessa asked. He put the sentry on a delay. That way, if an Elgin patrol walks into the camp, it will give them time so they'll all be within range.
You are clever, Tessa said.
Come, clever boy, Jaime said. Vámonos!
Chapter 6 A Wet Day. Hiking through the thick of the jungle was difficult and exhausting, especially after all we had been through. The jungle was hot and wet, as were we, though most of the moisture that soaked our clothing was probably our own sweat. About an hour after leaving our camp, we heard the firing of the sentry guns.
Sounds like the Elgen found our camp, Tessa said.
Or a monkey, I said.
Poor monkeys, Tessa said.
We walked the rest of the day and continued hiking at night, our trail lit by Tessa's glow and mine. Jaime knew the jungle well, and with a compass and machete, kept us moving at an exhausting pace. It must have been at least 2 in the morning when Tessa suddenly stopped walking.
I've got to stop. I can't walk anymore.
Me too, I said. I'm exhausted.
Jaime looked at us.
Okay, we can sleep for a few hours, but not too long.
Tessa shrugged off her pack and dropped it on the ground.
Better than nothing, she said.
I took off my pack, too. My shoulders were chafed from where its straps dug into my skin.
Do we have anything to sleep on?
The tent and tarp are in her pack, Jaime said. It is big enough for 2.
He took off his own pack, checked for insects, then sat down on the ground against a tree.
What about you? I said to him.
I must stand guard, he said. We cannot take chances.
I felt bad for him. I knew he was exhausted too.
Thank you, I said.
It is my job, he replied.
Tessa opened her pack and brought out a small vinyl tent and a rolled-up tarp. There were no blankets, which, considering how warm the jungle was at night, weren't necessary. With Jaime's help, we set up the tent. Then Tessa and I climbed inside. I took off my shirt. Then Tessa and I spread out the tarp and lay down. The ground was warm and spongy.
I can't believe how loud the jungle is at night, I said.
That's when most things hunt, Tessa said.
Or flee.
Including us, I said. I breathed out heavily.
It's hard to believe it's just been one day.
We've escaped the Peruvian army in an Amazonian tribe's canoe, hiked through the jungle, been captured by the Elgin, destroyed our camp, and fled into the jungle. That's like 1,000 times more than what happened to me my entire middle school years in Meridian, Idaho.
I could use a little more dull, Tessa said.
She looked at me.
Do you think we'll ever have normal lives?
If Hatch has his way, normal won't be what we think it is.
What do you mean?
He wants to change the world.
One person can't change the world, Tessa said.
Of course they can, I said. Every idea starts with just one person.
You're right.
She was quiet for a moment. Then she said,
How do you think the Elgen found us?
Probably L readers, I said.
I forgot they had those, she said. The guards once used them to find Torsten when he was out hunting.
She frowned.
That means they could still track us.
That's probably why Jaime is pushing us so hard. I looked at her. Don't worry about it. They got lucky last time. This is a big jungle, and they don't have helicopters anymore. We're just a needle in a very big green haystack.
I hope you're right, she said.
She closed her eyes.
Good night, Michael.
Night, Tessa, I said.
Thank you for saving my life today.
It was still dark when Jaime woke me.
We must go, he said.
It took me a moment to remember where I was. The jungle was still impossibly noisy with the sounds of insects and wildlife. I sat up and yawned.
Did you sleep?
I asked.
No, I will sleep tonight.
I gently shook Tessa, who fought opening her eyes.
What?
She said angrily.
Vamanos,
Jaime said.
What?
It's time to go, I said. She opened her eyes.
We just went to sleep like 2 minutes ago.
It has been 3 hours, Jaime said. I am sorry, but we must keep going. We must stay ahead of the Elgen.
Even Elgen sleep, she said, rolling back over. Wake me when there's a sun.
Jaime looked at me helplessly. I put my hand on her back and shook her.
Come on, Tessa. We better do what he says.
Still nothing. Frustrated, Jaime said,
You can sleep after you are dead.
I turned and looked at him.
Is this not an American thing to say? Jaime said.
Not really. I shook her again.
Come on, Tessa.
After a moment, she breathed out heavily.
All right already.
She sat up and rubbed her eyes, then looked around.
It's still night.
No, it is very early morning, Jaime said.
You're a glass half full kind of guy, aren't you?
Tessa said. Jaime just looked at her.
What?
It could be worse, I said. Jaime hasn't slept at all. She frowned.
Sorry, I'm just grouchy when I don't get enough sleep.
We folded our tarp and tent, returned them to Tessa's pack, then started off again. The route we cut ran parallel with the river. It would have been much easier and faster to walk along the bank, but we kept our distance from the water. It wasn't long before I discovered why. Shortly before the sun came up, we stopped to rest on the crest of a hill. Jaime left us for a few minutes, then returned.
Be very quiet, he said.
He led me to where the hill started to slope toward the river. Peering out between the trees, I could make out about a quarter mile south of our vantage point, the Rio de Madre de Dios below us, its pale brown water shimmering beneath the moon's glow. Jaime touched his ear, and then I heard it. Somewhere in the distance was the whine of an outboard motor. A moment later, he pointed and whispered,
Look!
A motorboat filled with Elgen guards sped by. They held spotlights and guns, both of which they panned against the banks.
They are patrolling the river, Jaime said. It is the second Elgen boat I have seen.
As long as they stay on the river, we're okay, right?
He turned and looked at me.
We still must cross the river to get to the highway.
I looked back down at the wide river.
We have to swim across that?
He nodded.
See.
Aren't there, like, alligators and piranhas in there?
And the snakes, Jaime said.
At least we've got that to look forward to, I said.
When we got back to our camp, Tessa was sitting on a log, eating some jerky.
Vamanos, I said.
Oh, please, not you too, she said. It's bad enough hearing it from him.
She shrugged on her pack, then stood. Where'd you go?
Jaime wanted to show me the river. The Elgin are patrolling it. For a moment, I thought maybe you guys had left me.
Thought or hoped? I asked.
Why would I hope you would leave me?
So you could sleep.
I'll sleep after I'm dead, she said.
We hiked all day, taking only a few short breaks to eat and drink. Jaime said little, and even though he hadn't slept, kept us going at a brisk pace. Tessa was stronger than she looked, and in spite of our difficulty getting her up, once she was walking, she just kept on. By twilight, I could see that Jaime was finally starting to lose it. As the sun set, I grabbed his arm.
You need to sleep, I said.
He looked almost confused with weariness.
We must keep on.
We'll be okay, I said. We can't keep walking like this forever.
He looked around a moment, then said,
Okay, Mr. Michael. We will camp here. I will take the first watch.
No. You need to sleep. We all do. He looked at me anxiously.
Look, no one is going to find us. I couldn't find me here.
Finally, he took a deep breath and said,
Okay. Okay.
We found a dark thicket of trees where we set up our tent and covered it with leaves and vines. By the time we were done, you could have walked over it and not seen it. Then Jaime gathered dead leaves and threw them in a circle around the camp.
What's that for? I asked.
If someone comes near, it will wake us.
As tired as I am, I said, I don't think dynamite would wake me.
There's no way dynamite would wake me, Tessa said. All three of us climbed into the tent, and Jaime pulled a cover of leaves down over the tent flap, sealing us in. It was a two-man tent, Tessa joked. It's okay, there are only two men, right? And it was cramped with three, but it was also cozy and dry. Not surprisingly, Jaime was asleep within minutes of lying down, which was unfortunate since he snored loudly. After one especially loud snort, Tessa laughed.
So much for the camouflage.
Even with Jaime's snoring, Tessa also fell asleep quickly. Her face was next to mine, and for a moment, I just looked at her. It was strange how little I really knew about her, yet how close I felt to her. Hard times will do that. As I looked into her beautiful face, I wondered about Taylor. I wondered if the soldiers were hurting her. The thought of it made me twitch. I pushed it out of my mind. There was nothing I could do about it now, and there would be plenty of time to worry about that later. And now, in our nylon cave, for the first time in a long while, I felt safe. I closed my eyes and fell asleep. The sun was already up when I woke. From the look of it, it had been up for quite a while. I felt more rested than I had in days. Tessa was already awake and looking at me.
Hey, handsome, she said. You gonna sleep all day?
If I can, I said, rolling over.
Sorry, not an option. You can sleep after you're dead.
I grinned as I sat up.
Where's Jaime? He went to find water. He said to give this to you for breakfast if you ever woke.
She handed me a box with a sweet roll and dried bananas and papaya.
You're gonna love that sweet roll. Jaime called it castana bread. I was tempted to eat yours and tell you that we were eating monkey brains for breakfast.
I raked my hair back from my face.
Yeah? What stopped you?
No idea, she said.
We folded up the tarp and had begun taking down the tent when Jaime returned.
Buen día, hermanos, Jaime said. I found water.
He handed me a wet, cold canteen. I passed it on to Tessa, who drank thirstily.
Oh, it's cold, she said.
See, I found a spring.
She handed the canteen back to me. The water was not only cold, it was sweet and delicious.
Good water, I said.
Good water in the Amazon if you can find it, Jaime said.
I screwed the lid back on the canteen. What's on the schedule today?
We are close to a mountain, Jaime said. This afternoon, we will set up the radio.
The thought of this encouraged me. And talk to the voice?
That is my hope, Jaime said.
Then let's get going, I said.
Vamanos! Vamanos!
Jaime repeated. I still hate that word, Tessa said. We finished breaking down the tent, repacked our gear, then set off again. Even though the hike was mostly uphill, we all felt so much better having slept that it seemed easy. We reached the mountain's peak around 3 p.m. From our new vantage point, we could see above the forest canopy.
This is the place we will set up our camp, Jaime said.
Tessa and I put up the tent while Jaime worked on reassembling the radio. When we had finished, Tessa went inside to rest, and I went to see if Jaime needed any help. He looked up at me as I approached.
Anything I can do? I asked.
See, I need you to climb a tree as high as you can with this, he said, holding out a coil of wire.
I took the wire. What is it for?
It is the antenna for our radio. I would do it myself, but I weigh too much to reach the treetop.
No problem, I said. I surveyed the trees around us until I decided on the one that looked most scalable. Then I tied the end of the wire around a belt loop of my pants.
Wish me luck.
Be careful, Jaime said. The branches may be wet. Do not fall.
Not planning on it, I said. The tree's trunk was about 4 feet wide, and its bark was smooth and gray. I climbed up about 50 feet before the branches were too thin to support me.
How's this?
I shouted down to Jaime, who is now standing with Tessa at the base of the tree, looking up. He put a finger over his lips, then gave me a thumbs up. I tied the wire as high above me as I could, then I climbed back down the tree. It was much darker below as the sun was beginning to set.
You're practically a monkey, Tessa said. I'm impressed.
I was always climbing the trees around my apartment, I said. I turned to Jaime. Sorry, I shouted. I just forgot.
We must be careful, he said. The Elgen are hunting. I do not think they are close, but I have been wrong before.
Can we call the voice now?
He glanced down at his watch.
In a little while, he said. Now we should eat.
He walked back to the tent.
What's for dinner?
I asked.
Sandwiches,
Tessa said.
Again?
I said.
No pizza?
She smiled as she handed out the sandwiches.
I almost forgot that pizza existed. How would that be right now? A thick, hot, cheesy slice of pizza.
Heavenly, I said, with a chocolate shake.
Now you're just torturing me, she said.
We ate for a moment in silence. Then Jaime said,
We have pizza in Peru.
Is it any good? Tessa asked.
I think so, but not so good as American pizza.
Just talking about it made my mouth water. I didn't think we could be farther from real pizza. Suddenly my sandwich didn't taste as good.
What do you like on your pizza? I asked Jaime.
Sausage and olives, he said.
And you?
I asked Tessa.
Veggies. I used to be a vegetarian, she said. But that was before the jungle. What about you?
Pepperoni, I said. Did you know that in Italy, pepperoni is not what you think it is? Tessa said. It means little peppers.
Like hot peppers? Chaimie asked.
She nodded. Green peppers.
Then what's pepperoni? I asked.
Salami, she said. Americans in Italy always get that wrong.
You've been to Italy? I asked.
Of course. I used to be part of Hatch's family, she said. I've been everywhere.
Oh, I said, nodding. I keep forgetting that you used to be one of them. She spun at me.
One of them? What did you mean by that?
I was caught off guard by her reaction. I didn't mean anything by it.
Don't judge me, she said angrily. I was 9 years old when they took me. If they had found you at that age, you would have been one of them, too.
I wasn't judging you, I said.
It sounded like it, she said.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Jaime looked back and forth between us, then down at his watch.
It is time, he said. We can radio now.
Tessa relaxed a bit. I was grateful for the interruption. We finished eating, then Jaime pulled a small LED flashlight from his pocket and lit our path as we walked back to the radio. He sat down in front of it.
Michael, you sit here, he said,
motioning to his left side. I sat down next to him. He handed me the radio's plug.
Take this, but do not pulse too strong. You could blow up the radio.
He turned to Tessa.
Do not make him more electric.
I'll try not to, she said. She stepped a few feet back from me and sat down. Jaime handed me a headset.
Put this on.
Jaime and I both put on headsets, and then he nodded for me to begin. I lightly pulsed, and the digital readouts on the radio lit up.
Less electricity, he said.
I reduced my pulse. Jaime turned a few switches, then dialed in a code. The sound of static burst over my headset. Jaime lifted the microphone to his mouth.
Lightning Rod, this is Southern Cross. Over.
There were three beeps. Then a voice said,
Southern Cross, we read you. Please confirm.
10-1-1-9-6-2.
Confirmed. One moment, please.
There was a pause. Then the voice I recognized came over the radio.
Southern Cross, please give us an update.
We are in the jungle, but safe.
Have you any jewels?
A diamond and a tourmaline.
Tourmaline? This is unexpected, but very good news.
Yes, it was a surprise.
Have you encountered any resistance?
We escaped an attack. We were forced to abandon our base.
Was protocol followed?
Yes, sir. Everything was destroyed or carried with us.
Good. We have learned that Hatch has been summoned back to the base. The chairman is very displeased with him. We believe he will be terminated.
Madre de Dios! Jaime exclaimed. This is mucha reason for a fiesta!
I grabbed the microphone. This is Michael. Do you have my mother?
Do not speak your name on air, the voice said sharply.
Sorry,
I said.
A moment later, the voice said, She is safe.
Can I talk to her?
She's not here, but I can arrange for you to speak.
Do you know anything about the rest of my friends?
Your friends have been captured by the Peruvian military. They are being held under tight security in Puerto Maldonado. We expect that they will be transported to Lima for trial.
Jaime looked at me and nodded in confirmation. We've got to rescue them, I said.
We don't believe that a rescue attempt is advisable. At this time, our best option is diplomacy.
We have connections in the consulate.
You can get them released?
The voice paused.
We'll do our best.
Your best? What does